Certain lines of work tend to get stereotyped in popular culture. Take a look at the funny papers and you're likely to run across a cartoon about a person in therapy. And there's always a couch the client lies on while the therapist sits in a chair nearby taking notes. It's a cliche, but a powerful one. The cartoon would be less understandable if the client had a paintbrush and was working on a canvas, but that is approximately how art therapy works. Our next guest practices art therapy, helping people make changes in their lives through the creation of art. Delaine Du is a longtime friend of JPR and the certified art therapist in the Rogue Valley, and our guest once again on The Exchange. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Jeff.
Tell us a bit about, make it clear up front, this is a certified field of therapy, correct?
Yes. So in order to be a registered certified art therapist, someone has to have a master's degree in psychology and art therapy. In some way, there's various ways to do that. And then go through registration and certification process with the American Art Therapy Association and the Art Therapy Credentialing Board. And that involves the usual psychology, you know, postgraduate internship, supervised hours training.
So I'm curious to know how people come to this. Do you consider yourself an artist who got into therapy or a therapist who got into art? Or was there always that blending of skills for you?
For me, it varies from person to person, but usually it's one of those two things, a therapist who becomes an art therapist or an artist who becomes an art therapist. My personal experience was going to a private art school in Detroit, Michigan, which I loved, but which was very intense and a lot of critiquing of all of the work that we did. And I took my first introduction to art therapy class as an undergrad there and thought, oh man, this is it. I've made it. I can make it ugly. I can rip it up. I can refuse to do it at all. And nobody can give me a bad grade and nobody can say that it's wrong. So that was my in. And once I found that, I realized that I had been doing my own expressive work from a very early age, not art therapy with an art therapist, you know, without intervention, but I've been getting that part of, I'm going to put it on the paper. Whatever feels uncomfortable to me or stressful, I'm just going to put it on the paper. So I had that part most of my life.
So you naturally worked out your stuff on the paper.
Right. I just didn't have anybody to help me intervene or know what to do with it. After I got it on the paper.
Yeah. And what was your medium of choice? Or did it really matter depending on what was available?
It didn't really matter, especially as a kid. It was whatever was available. I mean, it could be mud,
really?
Or dirt sometimes. Right. You know, I have been known to use dirt in my sketchbook when there's nothing else.
You mentioned that one of the things that appealed to you, certainly in college, was that nobody could really criticize the art. I mean, how good were you as an artist? I mean, is it... I'm trying to be gentle here.
Oh, Jeffrey.
I mean, do people go into art therapy because they're not that great at art or something like that?
That saying about those who teach.
Yeah, okay, you found the wavelength.
Yeah. It's the art that gets hung in a gallery or a museum. It's always a matter of opinion, but there are, you know, aesthetics. And in art therapy, one of the nice things is that the aesthetics are secondary to the communication of somebody's personal imagery. The personal imagery is about communicating my experience and getting to see what that looks like outside of my head or outside of my body and allowing someone else to witness it and then having that to work with to resolve conflict. So that's a really different process than making something for sale or making something for a gallery show. But I am also an artist, so I do keep a sketchbook for about 20 years, and sometimes I have pieces in shows, and sometimes pieces sell, and sometimes they don't.
One of the times I wished, indeed, we had a video camera in here with us, because you do, in fact, have a sketchbook with you, which doesn't do us a lot of good with microphones only in the room.
No, but I take notes in there, too, sometimes.
For yourself, as you were growing and expressing yourself through art, did you occasionally run across frustrations? Not that the art wasn't good enough, but that it didn't actually say what you wanted it to say. You didn't quite get the message out the way you wanted to.
My own personal expression?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting question. It happens all the time. My clients experience it because of...
That's where it was leading, was the frustration that they might feel about, well, no, this is not what I meant to get out of it.
Yeah. I find, I use the phrase trust the process a lot, which in the world of therapy really translates to trust yourself, which is a big piece that most people struggle with no matter what's going on in their life, is trusting their decisions, trusting what they know, trusting other people. So trusting the process in art therapy relates to that. And it really doesn't matter what it looks like. I will put on my art skill teacher hat once in a while if it serves the purpose of helping the person communicate better what they want. However, in art therapy, the mistakes and the places that don't work out quite right are often the places where the information is for reflecting to me what's the irritation or defining a little bit better why I'm feeling this way or what that big feeling breaks down into specifically.
So stuck at the artwork can be reflective of stuck in life.
Right, right. So the process that somebody goes through while they're making the image can be a reflection of that, and then the image itself becomes a reflection of that. So I just had a client recently that was kind of stuck with that. I don't know how much of this is me learning to draw and how much of this is me doing therapy. And the advice that I gave was let it happen, put it on the paper, trust the process. We'll see what that tells you because you're getting information from the perceived mistakes in that. And then if it's an image that you want to work with further and you want to like nail artistically, then I will help you learn how to do that.
Wow.
But let's not do that so that we lose the therapeutic information that comes from your imagery.
But interesting decisions that have to be made in your part as the therapist and figure out which part of your training to use. Do you want to direct this person through the art? Or do you want to direct them through the therapy part? And, you know, which one do they really want at that moment?
Right, right. And as an art therapist, my primary goal is always the treatment. So all of the decisions that I make regarding the art materials, regarding the art directive, if I'm directing it and providing the intention for the person, or if they're initiating on their own, how I intervene, if I interrupt their process or not, if I teach a skill at any point in the process or not, all of those decisions are treatment-based as an art therapist. So they're all in service of helping that person gain insight and make positive change.
Delaine Du is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's a certified art therapist working in the Rogue Valley. You can join us on the exchange to ask more about the process and the outcomes of it. Join us at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org or check us out on Facebook. You can see a picture of Delaine from when she was just getting settled in this morning. One of many people I have found to say, "You're going to take a picture of me? This is radio." So it happens, yes. We do. It's really impressive, the thinking about the different sides of your brain that really have to be used through this process, because you have to be scientist almost in one sense and definitely artist in the other one.
Yes, both of those are true. I describe it as a double major in school because I had to learn all of the psychology pieces and all of the art pieces and how the two intertwine and what the effects are of the two together.
And so who comes to you? What are some of the circumstances in which people will seek out art therapy? And have they often tried other kinds of therapy first?
Sometimes they've tried other kinds of therapy first. So I do definitely have people who have come to me and said, you know, I've done this, 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 and this. And now I thought maybe this would be different and this would help. So that does happen depending on where I am. Sometimes I had a contract for a very long time in an art therapy program at the Oregon Youth Authority facility in Grants Pass. And in that setting, I once in a while would get referrals from the treatment staff there for someone who just wasn't very verbal and they weren't able to participate in verbal therapy very well for one reason or another. So the art therapy group was a nice place to be able to begin to express and communicate something without having to use words.
Is there then an age group that does seem to make the best use of art therapy? And is it often?
It's
people?
All ages. Mm-hmm. It depends. I would say that depends more on the therapist and their specialty. So another myth that I run into a lot is, oh, you must love working with children. And I actually don't love working with children. My cutoff is pre-adolescence. About 12 is when I start to kick in. So I specialize in adolescents and adults. I have a contract over at Rogue Manor right now in Medford and work with an elder group there. So it's very much all ages, all abilities, which is another piece that's nice about art therapy, that it's very flexible. I've worked with blind people. I've worked with developmentally disabled people. In prisons. Right now, I have a group at Providence Hospital for cancer survivors and then a private practice. So people coming to my private practice generally fit into one of my specialty areas as a therapist, which is trauma, anxiety, sexuality, gender identity, medical art therapy. Those tend to be the reasons that people come to me.
You mentioned prisons. Is that the OIA?
That was the OIA. And then I had a pregraduate internship at Vacaville.
Really?
In California, yeah.
Which is maximum security, isn't it?
Yeah, maximum security mental health unit.
What was that like?
It was unnerving. Uh-huh. It's a long walk from the front door to the unit door and a long wait standing there to be let into the unit from the general hall. Very, very fascinating, though. I mean, I saw just heartbreaking imagery. And it's a place where I saw the power of imagery to be able to tell the underlying story or the inside story versus what somebody presents on the outside. So somebody's developmental level in their self can show up in an image and look so different than the person that you see on the outside that you have chit-chat with.
Do the clients sometimes surprise themselves, end up with stuff on paper, on canvas? I don't know if you do sculpture too, but mm-hmm. the work just ends up representing something they had no idea was in there.
Yes, that definitely happens. And often what happens is because art therapy gives us a chance to let our unconscious speak, which doesn't happen very often in a safe way. Then the conscious part of us can see that, and that's what's surprising. And with trauma in particular, that will relate into emotion, which can be surprising. So somebody's working on an image, oftentimes working with a color that feels safe, just doing something soothing, and that safety foundation psychologically makes a little net for them to be able to look at something that feels not so safe. So an uncomfortable emotion will come in. So it's happened for me, and I've seen it happen over and over again. So, you know, soothing, safe color, and then all of a sudden anger or sadness bursts through, and sometimes laughter, sometimes something fun bursts through. So that's the unconscious getting to have a say, and then our brains connecting the emotion to it. And then after that, the person can relate the story. And that's where, for example, healing from trauma can happen.
Delaine Du, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a certified art therapist practicing in the Rogue Valley. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You can check out a picture of Delaine, at our website, our Facebook page. And join us there. Jamie in Medford is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Delaine Du.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Delaine, I was just curious if you've ever come across a woman named Betty Edwards. In 1989, she wrote a book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, A Course in Enhancing Creativity and Artistic Confidence. Basically, what she suggests is that people use their drawing capabilities, but she suggests that they use their less dominant hand to do it. Say, for instance, if they're right-handed, they would be drawing things with their left hand, and also suggesting that they draw things upside down as they're shown. And I'll just read an excerpt from the book, and I'll get any reactions from that, Jeffrey.
All right.
What is the solution to this dilemma? Psychologist Robert Orenstein suggests that in order to draw, the artist must mirror things or perceive them exactly as they are. Thus, you must turn off your dominant left mode of verbal categorizing and turn on the right mode processing part of your brain so that you can see the way an artist sees. And I'll take any reactions that off the air, Jeffrey.
Thanks for that, Jamie. Appreciate that. Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. It's clear, Delaine, you're familiar with that work.
Yes, I'm familiar with that work. It's great work. I actually use a chapter of that in my reader in my class at SOU, not focused on that part of it. But so it's true. From an art therapy perspective, the drawing something upside down doesn't relate very often. It depends, again, on the treatment goal and the person. But that relates to, you know, drawing a still life or trying to draw an image of something outside of you. And art therapy is based on what my personal imagery is. So there is no pre-existing form of it until I make it into form. So in that respect, the upside down part doesn't relate greatly. But the drawing with the left hand or the non-dominant hand can help sometimes to access more of the unconscious or to shake it up a little bit to help the person be less inhibited about making an image of whatever they're feeling or whatever the conflict is for them, because then there's a lower expectation that it's going to look right. So sometimes drawing with a non-dominant hand helps with that. The piece of Betty Edwards' work that I love is where she discusses the way that our culture views art making and as a talent, and that she compares it to reading and talks about an art competency. So if we treated reading the way that we treat art in our culture, then very few people would learn to read, because we would say, oh, you know, if you have a knack for it, mm-hmm. then you'll do it. And otherwise, you know, if you're not very talented in it, we're not even going to bother teaching you how to do it. So that's my favorite Betty Edwards piece.
Well, that's good to know that we need to not think in terms of, well, you got to be good to be able to do this. So how do you decide in therapy what kind of artwork, or do you just say, here, we're going to paint or we're going to draw?
So again, it's treatment driven. Some examples are, well, I usually find out from the person if they have something that's arising for them that they really want to focus on. So if they do, then I can help direct the focus of their image making from that. So if they say, for instance, you know, I'm really nervous or afraid that the cancer is going to come back, and the other day it really interrupted me at work, and this is what happened, that sort of thing, then we have a lot to work with. And so I would invite them to make an image of what they think the fear looks like. So again, taking that fear experience that they have internally and externalizing it so that we can get a better look at it and see how it works outside of them. So that's an example of where that would go. And choice of materials depends on treatment goal and also on the person. If somebody's very, very tight and controlled, and if they ask me for a pencil, which is pretty common, there's always one person in a group that asks for a pencil. And then a couple minutes later, that person will ask for an eraser. And that one of the things that can indicate is wanting to have a lot more control than might be necessary in an art therapy session, where part of the point is to have some looseness so the unconscious can come through. So that tightness with a pencil can prevent the unconscious material from showing up.
You can literally erase the record.
You could erase the record, exactly. And on the other end of the spectrum, I think this is an urban myth, I'm not sure, but it could happen, is the art therapist, the young, inexperienced art therapist gets a job at an inpatient, chronically mentally ill units at some hospital and brings clay and water to the group. And then in a few minutes, everybody needs to be escorted from the room because they've all disintegrated because the material is too loose. So it doesn't have enough structure. Uh-huh. So if somebody doesn't have very much ego structure, ego strength, then using a really loose material can be a bad combination. You know, that mm-hmm. person needs to shore up or have more structure than giving them a material that fights back a little bit or has some tooth to it can be really helpful.
Structure, absolutely. Let's take a call here. We have Eileen and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with certified art therapist Delaine Dew.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Delaine, I heard your name and I heard your voice, and I thought that has to be the Delaine Dew that I remember from 20, 25 years ago. We had a dysfunctional church board. It wasn't one person, it was nine. And Delaine and I were on a committee to help make that better. And Delaine, do you remember you said we have to change the culture? We did, and it worked. Do you remember that?
I do. Thank you.
That was a miracle. And you said, put a tablecloth on, make a pot of tea, give them something sweet and something salty. And when we welcomed them with that, they thought they were in the wrong room. And they just mellowed out because they had, you changed the culture. You made it be a caring culture. And that was with a group of people. And I wonder if you still do anything with groups.
All right, good question. Thanks.
You do the art therapy, but that was just, I don't know.
All right, thanks.
Heartfelt therapy. Thank you.
Thanks for the testimonial, Eileen. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Eileen. How sweet to hear your voice and to be reminded of that. I do work with groups and with corporations and help with board retreats and facilitate the difficult conversations that board and staff members of organizations have to have sometimes. And once in a while, that involves bringing in some artwork. But I also have training and skills in resolutions and concordance decision making, which I teach groups of people. So I am still for hire for organizations.
How long does individual art therapy tend to go on, and does insurance cover it, for example?
So an individual session is usually a regular session. It's usually an hour or, 55-minute hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. I have worked, depending on the client, I have worked longer with people or shorter, depending on their needs and
right,
the
weeks,
situation. So some people I work with for a year or two. I've had people work with me for a year and then take a break and then come back. Some people, 4-6 weeks. Really just depends on where they're at with the issues that they're addressing and what they, how much they want to accomplish at that time. And then insurance covers art therapy as long as the therapist is licensed in Oregon and can accept insurance.
Which is your case.
Actually, it's not my case. I'm jumping through all of the Oregon hoops for licensure as we speak.
Okay.
Hoops are being jumped.
So you know the hoops well now because you're in the process of doing it. Delaine Dew is a certified art therapist doing business in the Rogue Valley. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.